today on the Beginner Photography Podcast.
I always say, you know how you get great photographs? You hire great photographers. It's that simple. But you have to know which one is great in the job that you're giving them. There's greatness in all of them somewhere. But your greatness may lie in shooting full still life of food, you know? So that's not fair to then send you to the Super Bowl, right? I mean, that's how it works.
Hey, welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast. Today, we are learning some of the best tips for creating the perfect portfolio. So let's get into it.
Welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast, a weekly podcast for those who believe that moments matter most and that a beautiful photo is more than just a sum of its settings. A show for those who want to do more with the gear they have to take better photos today. And now, your host, Raymond Hatfield.
Well, hello, all of my photo friends. I got to tell you something. If you are looking to build a rock solid portfolio, you're in the right spot today, because today I chat with Brad Smith, who is a photo editor with more than 35 years of experience, having worked at Sports Illustrated, the New York Times, currently WWE, and worked at the White House as the director of photography during the Clinton administration. This is a lot. So if anyone knows what it takes to make a photo stand out, it's Brad. And today he shares a ton of lessons that he's learned that will help you build the best portfolio you can. Seriously, this is a game changer interview. You are going to love this one. So stay tuned for that. But first, I want to give a quick shout out and say thank you to Meg0037 for leaving the podcast a 5-star iTunes review. Meg says, I listen to the podcast literally every day. It is my saving grace to get me through my long and dreaded workday and fills my head with fun and useful information that will benefit my end goal: to become a photographer. It is a reassurance that with my drive and determination, I can accomplish this dream. Meg, oh my gosh, I am so humbled to be a part of your photography journey. I remember when I first moved out here to Indiana from California, my wife was in school full time. And since rent still needed to be paid, I was working on growing my photography clients. I took a 9-to-5 day job at a plastics factory, and it was the worst time of my life, legitimately. But I would listen to podcasts to keep me going, to keep me motivated, to remind me that, you know, where I was at the time, it was only temporary until I reached my goals. And as long as you keep moving forward, you're going to reach them eventually. To take a million small steps is better, and it's a whole lot easier than taking, you know, 10 giant steps, unreasonable steps. So just keep working at it every single day. And just know, Meg, that I am rooting for you. I'm so excited. So if you are listening and you haven't done so already, I cannot tell you how humbled I would be if you left the show a 5-star review on iTunes. It really does help legitimize the podcast, you know? Even though you listen to podcasts, I listen to podcasts, there's still a large number of people who do not listen to podcasts, and they're kind of questionable about it. So to see reviews, the more reviews, it does legitimize the show, so that we can continue to hear from world-class guests like, you know, today, Brad, like we're talking to. So it really is a helpful and a free way for you to support the show. So for everybody who has left a review, thank you. And for everybody who will leave a review in the future, thank you too. Thank you. So with that, let's go ahead and get on into today's interview with Brad Smith. Brad, with more than 35 years in the industry, we start real easy here. When did you know that photography was going to play an important role in your life?
Yeah, I would say high school is when it really started to formulate. I mean, I was always, and I don't think it's unusual, but I was always wanting to borrow my dad's camera to take pictures when I was a little kid, or at least take some pictures when we're on walking around. And my dad brought a camera like everywhere. It was in the Navy. So he had a lot of cameras that he bought when he would go overseas, and he'd bring them home and stuff, you know. So They were fun to use. Rolls of film were different than digital, obviously. There was a finite amount of images you could kind of screw up and before they took the camera away from you. But I liked taking pictures from the beginning. And then when I got in high school, I started to kind of understand and like a little more other people's photos. That's when it really shifted for me, was high school, when I realized that, oh, there's other types of photography. And it was all very rudimentary. I never took a class at all in high school, not one. But I would read about and found out about an Ansel Adams or, you know, a Robert Frank or those types of things, you know, and some news photos. I read Sports Illustrated since I was a little kid. So I got all the sports photos from those guys, from Walter Yost and the Neil Leifers and all those people, right? So I kind of understood that part of it. And it's really made me gravitate. At that point, the road shifted from wanting to take photos to wanting to look at other people's photos. And the interest in taking the photos became less and less. And the idea of working with photographers and somehow working with them and selecting photos, which I didn't really even know was a job, became heavier and heavier. So probably about high school. And by the time I was in college, I was hooked. So that was it. But it was always to look at other people's photos, which is a little weird, I guess, in a way, but still.
Why do you think that's weird?
I just think it's a little voyeuristic, like in a way, it's like a little creepy. Oh, you want to look at other people's pictures. But what I enjoyed was seeing photos that related to a place I wasn't able to go to an event I wasn't able to attend, to a culture I wasn't able to participate in. I mean, I got to see all that type of stuff by looking at other people's pictures, whether it was Geographic or Sports Illustrated or the newspaper. And I enjoyed that a lot. And I that's where my heart was. And I hadn't formulated what that meant exactly, but I could tell instinctively that's where my heart was looking at other people's pictures and enjoying their experiences as they kind of documented the world. I enjoyed them documenting the world more than me saying, I want to go around the world and document it. I wanted to see what they did because they're all different too. They all see it a little differently. And I just thought that was fascinating. And I thought it was an endless amount of good images coming my way. It would never end. It was just like the game that would never end. So I thought it was terrific.
But never so much more the desire to actually capture those things, but simply to ingest them and to enjoy them yourselves.
The only photos I wanted to take on my own were really just for myself, just to take some pictures. And I'd had a camera. This is before phones being the camera, but, you know, an actual camera. I would take pictures, sure. I would go with my friends in Florida where I grew up, you know, later in life, like in high school and stuff. And we'd go fishing and I'd bring a camera and take some pictures and I'd wander off and take some photos while they fished, or maybe I'd go fish a little bit. And if they went hunting, I'd take some pictures, but I didn't go hunting, you know, like that kind of stuff. And yeah. I kind of liked it a lot, but, you know, it was once I realized there were magazines and these magazines had photo departments that weren't just photographers, but it was clear they were editors. And I, you know, you ask a couple of questions, you figure out, oh, you kind of have an idea of what they do. For whatever reason, that was always far more appealing to me than actually taking the photos.
That's so interesting. And yeah. Did I hear you say that you went to college for photography? Is that right?
Yeah, I went to University of Florida, and I majored in photography, but so I know how to do it. I just didn't have any desire to do it for a living. And there was basically two opportunities for photography at Florida at the time. One was photojournalism, and one was more of like a fine art photography, I guess, for lack of a better way to put it, which was everything but photojournalism, I guess. So I took the fine art part where we made prints and, you know, we took pictures and we took a picture of a shadow on the sidewalk and, you know, that kind of stuff, you know, and you just explore really is what you're doing in college anyway, right? You're not really creating as much as you're just kind of exploring. And that's when it started to kind of formulate a little better. And that's when I decided and I looked up, I went to the library one day, and it's a true story. I went to the library and I took all the magazines and I photocopied the mastheads for all these magazines I wanted to work for when I realized they had photo departments. And I kept all those prints. I don't have them anymore, but I had them for years. And they were the mastheads of all these magazines. I thought, oh, this would be great. National Geographic, Sports Illustrated, Time, Newsweek, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I thought, this would be great to work for these places. I'm going to go to New York and work for them. I wanted to move to New York to work for all these magazines. That was my goal. So as soon as I got out of college, boom, I packed up my little car and had like a couple $100 in my pocket, and I moved to New York City. And I got to New York City, and within a month or so, because again, this is pre-Google, pre-internet, pre-Facebook,
yeah.
You can just ask anything and get an answer in 6 seconds. But after like a month, I realized, hey, wait, National Geographic's in Washington, D.C. So I had to cross them off the list because they weren't even in the right city. But other than that, everybody was in New York. So, you know, I started looking for jobs, and that's back when literally the newspaper had advertisements for jobs, you know, in the newspaper, classified. And that's where I kind of started looking for work. And that's where it started. And my very first job I got was with a rock and roll magazine called Circus Magazine. And Circus Magazine is made for like 12-year-old boys. That's what it's for. It's just filled with, back then it was Ozzy Osbourne, but whatever the equivalent of that is today, that's all it is. It's just boys playing guitar and yelling, and it's just never stops. That's kind of what Circus Magazine is. And it was fun. It got me into the door of a publishing company, and I saw how a magazine was made and art directors and, you know, getting photographs. I was really more in the traffic of the photos at that point, like making sure they came in, making sure they were sent back out, make sure they get copies of the magazines, really like office boy kind of thing. I think I literally was the very last person on the masthead. And I'm pretty sure the title of my job said staff. That's all it said.
Just staff. Congratulations. Yeah. That means that you get a paycheck. Yeah.
I got paid and I was in the masthead. You had to go way down, but it was on there. So it was kind of funny, but you know, I worked there for a while. And it taught me the business. And from that, it went to a textbook company, John Wiley & Sons, which makes college textbooks, makes a lot of the college textbooks we would have read, whether we know it or not. And so now you got different kinds of photos coming in. You got politics, you got science, you got the environment, you got fashion, a little bit of everything, whatever's in a textbook. So that was kind of fun. You saw a lot of different pictures. Again, primarily trafficking at that point, you know. But starting to look at images a little better because I had a great boss there and she let me look at photos and kind of understand why they're picking this one over that one. So it was kind of learning as I go. And then from there, I got my break was to go to Sigma, S-Y-G-M-A with a Y, by the way, Sigma. And it was a French news agency. And it was run by the legendary Eliane Lafont and her husband, Jean-Pierre Lafont, who's still like, he's a photojournalist, amazing work. She's a legend in the business. One of my coworkers was Kathy Ryan, who's been the photo editor for the New York Times Sunday Magazine for like 35 years now or something. She was one of my coworkers at the time. And, you know, and that's when we did research. So I work for a news agency. But what we do is you're calling me from Newsweek saying, hey, I need a bunch of photos of this thing that happened in Beirut. Can you send us photos? And I would go through all these photos that we have in this collection, literally slides. Pick the 20 I like the best, put them in a sheet and send them by courier over to the magazine. That's how photos were sent back then. So you learn a lot about photography really quick because you're seeing all kinds of photography across the board. They have everything. Agencies just, unless they specialize, news agencies cover everything, right? There's celebrities, there's travel, anything you can think of. So it's all great. And I'm having a great time looking at photos. I did that for 4 years and probably learned more there in that concentrated time there than anywhere else, and all the other places maybe combined, because it was a real learning curve. And Eliane was, you know, a classic, you know, this French newswoman who was like, you know, great in sales, great in marketing, great in knowing what photos would sell, great in picking talent to shoot for us. And it was an amazing place to be. So I did that for a while. So
looking at your like resume today, having worked with, you know, currently with WWE, with Sports Illustrated, and even the White House, like that's pretty incredible to say that working at Sigma for those 4 years, you learned more about your career than anywhere else.
And I think a lot of it has to do with like your kids learn whatever 70% of what they're ever going to learn by the time they're blah, blah, blah years old. Right.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, what? But it's that concentrated beginning area, you know, where I learned the value of the photos there. I learned what was a good photo there from Kathy Ryan and Eliane. And I learned, you know, that it's not just news photos that have value. There's beauty in other kinds of photography and not just like, this is hard news. Because you get all caught up in politics and world events and you think that's the only photography that matters. But there's other things that go on that they'd have equal value to somebody. And, you know, I learned the value of having good photographers in certain areas so you didn't have to fly somebody in all the time and having a diverse field. That I learned that there, that, like, mm-hmm. you can't just put everybody on a plane, you know. You need to build a network. And, I mean, I even understood that then, that you build this, because they were photos coming in from, like, all over the world. And those people lived in those areas, and they supplied images. If it was in India, this is the guy who shot it. We didn't fly somebody to India. This was our guy there. And that kind of sets the tone. And you're like, oh, so that's how you do it, you know. And to tell you the true fact, when I came to the WWE, their business model was basically, hey, if we're going to shoot something, we'll put somebody on a plane and we'll fly them around the world. And it's like, I got to tell you, there's a better way to do business. You know, why don't we develop somebody in London who's a really good shooter, and let's find somebody. Then we don't have to send two people from, you know, Connecticut to London every 6 months or something. We've already got somebody there. Then they can concentrate on this area. And so we've created more of a global network because of that. And that's something I learned, like, when I was at Sigma. So,
hey, Raymond here. If you're sometimes baffled by which camera settings to use, then I've got just the thing for you. My free guide, Picture Perfect Camera Settings. It's a fantastic starting point for anybody eager to understand the basics of camera settings in various shooting scenarios. And it's tailored to beginners who want to get out of auto mode, providing clear, easy-to-follow suggestions on where to start with your settings. So whether you're capturing a stunning landscape or a family portrait, Picture Perfect Camera Settings will help you to get off of automatic mode and explore the possibilities your camera offers. Remember, mastering photography settings is a journey, and this guide is your first step and the perfect resource to guide you towards finding the right settings for your style. So grab your copy today at perfectcamerasettings.com and start your journey to better photos.
That's incredible. Like, so many questions right now are going through my head about this. Obviously, that's a very long journey right there. Going back kind of to the beginning, obviously, college for photography, then you moved to New York. At that time, had you already decided the photography side is not for me, but the photo editing side is, and that's what you went to photography or that's what you went to New York for?
100%. 100%. Okay. When I moved to New York, I didn't even own a camera that I could have used on a real assignment anyway.
Really?
I
mean,
I had a camera. I had a Canon AE-1, like an old, like, it had like tape around one of the lenses. It was like one of those, you know? I still have that body and that lens today. It sits on our bookshelf upstairs next to some of my wife's old cameras as well. It sits there as like, it's like a paperweight, I guess, at this point, but, you know, it's still up there and the tape is still on it. But, I knew this is what I want to do. I want to look at other people's pictures. I want to figure out how to send them out to the universe for other people to see them. That's what I wanted. And Sigma did nothing but solidify what my instincts were telling me is what I wanted to do. 100%. Never wanted to pick up a camera.
No. I would think that AE-1, I would probably look at that more as like a trophy at this point than a paperweight. But, you know, we can call it whatever we want here. So I know that with a lot of the audience here, as you can imagine, with a show called the Beginner Photography Podcast, when they hear the word photo editor, they might think something entirely different, like Lightroom, Photoshop. So before we move forward, can you just give a brief job description of what a photo editor is?
100%. So what we have to distinguish is this new kind of trend of calling photo editing, because if you Google photo editing, that's what you get. People that do retouching. That's it. I don't even know how that started or where it started, but it's kind of taken over, kind of like an algae in a lake. It's just kind of... It's kind of taken over, and I have to try to figure out how to get rid of it. But that's not photo editing at all. It's something else and certainly is legitimate, but that's not photo editing. Photo editing is I secure images from some source. Either I hire you to shoot something for me, or you've already shot it and you send it in or whatever. But somehow I secure images. I bring them into my domain. And I look at the pictures, and as simple as math as there is, I decide these are the ones we're going to keep. These are the ones I'm sending back to you, right? Then I go through the process of doing some very basic captioning to make sure that the information about the photos is sustainable, not only for me, but for somebody tomorrow and when I don't work here next year, right? I just want to write the who, what, where, when, why, basic AP caption information. I want to put that on there to archive it so that people can find it. Then the next part is to find a place for it in the universe. Where is it going to live? Now, if I'm asking you for photos, I probably work for a place that asked me to ask you for photos. So let's say I work for a newspaper or a magazine. I'm now then taking those photos that you sent me, narrowing them down even more, working with the art director and the editor and so forth of that page or that magazine or that paper. And we figure out how it's all going to work, because every publication, not counting the web, it's all about math. I have X number of words that have to go on this page. And once I know this is how many words, this I have this much more room for other things, whether it's an ad or the headline or a photograph or a graphic or a map or whatever. It's all math. That's how it works. And that's, you have to figure out, where's my place in this? I'm part of this puzzle. I'm not the end all be all. I am simply a part of a puzzle. The words are part of it. The headline's a part of it. The map that they're using to show that it's in Michigan is part of it. And this big photograph is part of it. So I have to figure out how all that works. But the photo editor is the liaison between the photographer. Once they've taken their photos and given them to me, their job is done. That's it. Now they're just waiting to get paid and go do another job. That's it. They're not involved in all this other part of the process 99 out of 100 times. Mm-hmm. They give me the photos. I'm the liaison to make sure that they get used, they get seen, and they have some respect and value that everybody's able to enjoy them. That's what a photo editor does.
And you you will like hand pick photographers, say, for like a certain assignment coming up. Does that sound right?
Yeah, absolutely. And what you try to do, it's not much different than a taxi dispatcher. You know, you're calling trying to say who's available over here to some degree, but you're really realizing this is a good fit here, this is a better fit here. And the really good photo editors, what they understand is that, no offense to the photographers in the world, but they're not all created equal. They don't all have the same skill sets. Not all of them can do everything. It's none of those things that you kind of hear that any one of them will work. Nope, it doesn't work that way. And they will to some degree, but I'm not there to just kind of fulfill it and do okay. I want to do great. And I want them to do great. I want to put them in a position to succeed. So if I know there's somebody who's really good at and has experience in getting in a plane and shooting aerials, that's the person I'm shooting to shoot aerials, right? And if I know there's somebody who has an understanding and has experience shooting conflict, well, that's who I'm sending in to shoot conflict, et cetera. So you take all that into account and all these things, and you take these pieces and you put them where they best fit. You know, it's kind of a puzzle in a way, but you just want to make sure they're in a position to do the best available job. And I think that the really good photo editors, and I like to think that that's one of my best skill sets, is understanding who's best for each job. I want you to go do this because I think you would be good behind the scenes, kind of, you know, chatting to people and getting intimate, quiet moments. And I think you're better over here because you can see this big stadium and shoot a broad photo. They're two different skill sets. And I think understanding where those come from, that's how you produce the photos. I always say, you know how you get great photographs? You hire great photographers. It's that simple, you know, but you have to know which one is great in the job that you're giving them, right? There's all great. There's greatness in all of them somewhere, but your greatness may lie in shooting full still life of food, you know, so that's not fair to then send you to the Super Bowl, right? I mean, that's how it works. So you want to just make sure that people are where they're really good at what they do and they provide something back to you.
Hey, Raymond here, and we will get back to today's show in just a moment. But first, if you shoot in auto mode and you let your camera make the decisions for which settings to use, well, then you will only ever take the same photo as everyone else who shoots in auto. That's like 99% of the world's population, taking the same photo as you. Don't let that happen. Stand out. When you control your settings, you can create beautiful images. And to get you started, I invite you to download my free ebook, Perfect Camera Settings, over at perfectcamerasettings.com. There, you will see real photos that I've taken in different situations and the settings that I use to capture those photos. I'm also going to teach you how to know which setting is the most important to pay attention to and when to change them. So again, download your free copy over at perfectcamerasettings.com now. All right, let's get back to today's interview. All Okay, so I have a question that I'm still trying to formulate, I guess, in my head. And that is, at some point, a photographer has to enter into your ecosystem. You have to know of who they are. And is this is typically done, I'm guessing, through a portfolio. They send you a portfolio, you see a portfolio, and then from that, you put them into a bucket of where they're going to be best. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I think that the number of opportunities and options that they can enter my universe has grown exponentially over the years, mm-hmm. right? It used to be whatever way. It doesn't matter what it used to be because it doesn't exist anymore. You know, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Now this is the way we do it. And the way we do it is I could find you on Instagram. I could find you by word of mouth. I could find you because you won some award. I could find you because my wife mentioned your name one day. I mean, it could be like from anywhere. I don't care where they come from. I just want to know that this is where they are. Now I found out that part. My next thing is, where do you live? That's the first question I ask is, where do you live? And once I get that, then I like dive into the work and see what kind of work you do. Is it interesting to me? Is it work I want to look? And I would always, no matter where they live, I'm going to dive into looking at their work. Mm-hmm. But if they tell me they're in Belarus, I'm less likely to use them than if they tell me they're in Florida. So those things are important. It's not like it's inconsequential where they work. I mean, where they live and work. But then I dive into what type of photography do you offer? Are you better at the action part of it? Or are you better at the feature part of it? Are you really good at portraits, but not so good at action? And we kind of break it down that way. And then I kind of set my mental Rolodex up where I realize I've got people here, here, and here. I keep a series of post-its on a map in my office. And it kind of like, this is where I've got people here. And I realize, you know, when I inherited the staff at the WWE and I looked at where the photographers lived, we have two staffers and there were about seven freelancers that they used on a regular basis. Those seven freelancers lived in three states.
Oh, wow.
All seven. Florida, Connecticut, and California. Every single one of them lived in some vicinity of those three places. There was nobody in between. And I'm not talking about the person you mentioned earlier who we use like occasionally mm-hmm. here and there, but I mean the core group that they're flying around and using, they're all in the same place. And that was because it never occurred to them not to put them on a plane, so it didn't really matter where they live, right?
Yeah.
When we changed the philosophy of I want more regional representation, then we had to really start considering, I have nobody in the Midwest. Who am I going to use in the Midwest? I have nobody in Mexico, and we go there. I have nobody in London, and we go there all the time. Now we're in London all the time. I have a guy shooting for me in London that shoots constantly for me, COVID aside. He shoots constantly for me because there's no way in the world I'm going to put somebody on a plane constantly and send them over to London. That just doesn't make business sense, you know?
Yeah,
so sure. Once I get a hold of where they are, if I like their work, if I'm drawn to their work, if I feel compelled to somehow some attraction to their work, we're off and running, right? Now it's just a matter of we have a phone conversation. Do I like you? Do I want to work with you? Am I getting along with you? If you don't fall into those categories, like any other relationship, it kind of dies pretty quickly, you know? Because at the end of the day, people want to work with people they want to work with, you know? And it just, they either rub you the right way or they do things the way you're kind of comfortable with or they don't. It's not, you know, nothing personal.
Just of course.
Move on if it doesn't. But yeah, there's a group all over and I can find out where they are from and who they are from a million ways. And one of the things I do pretty frequently is I love to involve myself in as many portfolio reviews as people ask me to do. Because I always meet somebody that like, well, maybe I met eight people and seven of them really aren't for me. We're just talking about photography, but they're not so much for me. And one of them is, and maybe one of them is better for, hey, this is really going to be a good connection with somebody I know at the New Yorker or whatever. Because that's also what photo editors do. We kind of like incestuously kind of gather names and throw them around to other people because that's the way you also learn is from other photo editors. Who do you like in Michigan? I don't have anybody in Detroit, blah, blah, blah. And then they give you some names and now suddenly you've got somebody in Detroit, right? So that's being part of that photo community is that's where it really comes in.
There are two ways to bring home more money with your photography business. You either get more clients or you spend less of the money that you make. CloudSpot Studio helps you keep more of what you earn.
With the lowest payment processing fees in the industry, the average photographer will save $300 annually. And that's just more money to invest in essential gear, like a new flash or a sweet camera bag. You know, one that is perfect for storing all of the wedding day snacks that you can pack. But it's not just about savings. CloudSpot Studio is designed to streamline your workflow. Easily organize shoots, send contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and you're really going to enjoy the hassle-free payments. So sign up for a free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com. And as a bonus, you're going to get access to my exclusive wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires at no additional cost. Why let fees chip away at your profits? Empower your photo journey with CloudSpot and watch your business soar.
I could see how obviously all that linking together is going to make your life a whole lot easier when looking for a photographer.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the portfolio aspect of it, because I know, again, a lot of new photographers have questions about portfolios. I did when I first started, like as a wedding photographer, like, do I even need a portfolio? How does this work? So for you, what is it that is going to make a, in that example that you gave, you may talk to eight photographers, look at eight different portfolios, seven, not so much, but one of them is going to stand out. What is it in that eighth portfolio that you look at that makes it stand out above the rest?
Yeah. So I would say that if I'm looking at a number of books, and again, photography is as diverse as it could be, you know? So I do get asked to look at portfolios, and they're not all sports photographers. They're not all action-oriented event photographers, whatever you want to call the WWE. So some of them are just wanting to get feedback, and that's like a different conversation. That's just a general philosophical photo conversation, right? But the ones that are kind of falling into my category of, I can see working with this person for this reason or that reason. I think that what separates them is their work is, A, it's of a quality that I could use, number one. I start with that. I have a benchmark of it. It's got to be a certain quality. You have to understand that I'm primarily promotional, marketing, editorial driven photo person, right? For my company. Almost all the photos we use are used internally to promote the WWE again, right? I use the photos that we take, almost the majority of 90% of them are used just to promote it all over again. It's the same person who shoots for the circus. You know, all those photos are just used to promote the circus. You know, they're used to promote the program, and they're used to sell it because they're coming to Atlanta next week. That's what the photos are for. And our company is very similar to that. So with that being the case, what I want is somebody who kind of lives within the guidelines, I guess, so to speak, or certainly the style of what we do, right? Which is not sketchy black and white. And it's not anything that's like some kind of quirky kind of processing thing. And it's not, you know, this shoot from the hip guerrilla journalism thing where it's all out of focus and really kind of like, you know, street. That's not what we do. I appreciate that stuff, but that's not what we do. I need somebody that can come in and document what we do on the parameters that we do. So the quality is there, and yet your work somehow is distinguished by being a little different than other people, right? That's the hardest thing, I think, for photographers to really get a hold of, because they are fed so many visuals from so many people that they, rightfully so, are trying so hard to kind of emulate, style themselves after, and so forth. And it all sounds good until you find your own style. And hopefully it's sooner than later that you find, this is my direction, right? And to say what it is impossible. It's like love. You just know it when it hits you, you know? You couldn't define it if you wanted to. But you can try. Everybody's been trying forever. But the reality is, you know it when you feel it, right? And that's the same thing with the photographers. You just kind of know, this is just a little bit different. I like this work. It's just something a little bit unique about it, right? They have a timing issue, or they just see things, or it could be a composure issue, you know, how they compose things and how they just view the event and so forth pretty seamlessly. They always get my Raw or SmackDown or WWE branding as part of the image. They understand the business part of it. That's the person I'm kind of gravitating towards. And that's even before I figure out whether it's a person I want to work with, you know. And then we get to that part. And what I don't want is disruption. I have a team. I want to keep a team. I've got multiple. Rarely do I ever send one photographer to shoot a lot of stuff. That's the small percentage. Mostly it's within a team. So I need people that can work within a team, enjoy working with the team, helping each other, all that part. I don't need some lone wolf who wants to work by themselves. Because if that's the case, then you should go to Alaska, you know, and shoot, and literally shoot wolves or something by yourself. You know, this is like a team, a group effort, you know, and I want all my parts to kind of be working together. So I'm just looking for somebody who falls within the parameters of our style to some degree, but yet just a little bit different from the other people I could have hired, you know. So if that makes sense. And they don't necessarily had to have shot wrestling before to shoot it. I've got a bunch of people who work for me who are more traditional sports type photographers, and they're learning the wrestling part. But they're bringing the hand-eye coordination, action type photography with them and doing a great job understanding that part of it. And they're just shooting this sporting event instead of a different sporting event, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I would imagine that I've never shot a football game or a baseball game or a wrestling event, but I would imagine that there is – it's kind of – similar in the ecosystem where you need to show like everybody's here. You need to get the action itself. We need some payoff. I understand that. But when it comes to building the portfolio, how do we recognize gaps in what we have? Does that question make sense? Or is it dependent on who's viewing the portfolio?
Well, I mean, there's no doubt that the second part is true because, you know, you could show it to five people and literally get five different recommendations on what you shoot in your portfolio. So I don't, you know, and that's because it's not math and it's a subjective business that we're in. That's what you have to do with it. And I would recommend that every photographer, A, don't take anything personally, if it's possible. B, after they've insulted you or told you this isn't any good or that's any good, just take a breath and go sit by yourself somewhere and think, what can I honestly use from this conversation, right? What will help me? You know, if four people told you some photo doesn't work, then it doesn't work. If one person out of 20 told you some photo doesn't work, 19 liked it or didn't say anything, so I wouldn't worry about it. You know, I mean, that's, I think you have to kind of take that into account as to how many people are kind of viewing it. Number two, I don't think you can have enough people look at your work. Photo people specifically, professionals, that's professors, an editor at a local newspaper, if you're in college or whatever, get away from your school for a minute and go have somebody else look at it. There's tons of online portfolio reviews, and some of them cost money, some of them are free, I guess, it's fine. Plus, there's a network. Ask somebody to look at your work. What's the worst they could do? Not answer your email? That's the worst thing that happens. You know, you're not going to jail for it. Just ask them. They can say, your portfolio is your website at this point. I don't see many portfolios anymore that isn't basically going over somebody's website. I mean, that's what you have to kind of remember, is that majority of things, especially now, is your basic website. Now, as you get in different levels of photography, that changes. My wife does fine art photography. She has an actual portfolio, right? And they're like big prints, and they're, you know, it's a different process. The whole thing is different. You know, I'm like, show me your 10 best photos. I'm going to decide if I like you or not. And then I'm going to have somebody else come in. I'm like, boom, boom, boom. And my wife's more like, you know, sit there and look at stuff for a while. And they talk about things and philosophy and styles. And what were you going for? Because there's a lot of it's interpretive, et cetera, et cetera. And all that's great. It's just different than what I'm doing, right?
Yeah.
The majority of stuff I'm looking for is a straight up, what you and I would have called at one point, just a portfolio. It'd been a book and you unzip it, you lay it on a table and somebody looks at it. Then that morphed into them showing it to you on a tablet and they bring their iPad and you're looking at that way. Now it's basically, I'll sit in the office with you and why don't you just go to my website and I created a gallery for you, you know, because you could customize your website for those clients, which I think is a really smart thing to do. I think that the two mistakes that photographers make in the beginning, and let's be really clear, they make a lot of really great decisions, not all mistakes by any means. Make a lot of really good, smart decisions. But the two big mistakes they make, number one, they make a mistake if they think it's only about their photography.
Ah.
They think it's just their pictures. I'm a really good photographer. I have all this great work and I'm going to get work. Completely wrong. Now, you might get hired once like that. But if you know, if you're not somebody they want to work with, and I'm not going to fill in the obvious blanks of what that means because it's different for everybody. But if you can't represent me, which is what you're doing when you go somewhere to shoot for me in the way that I want you to, I'm not hiring you, right? If you can't figure out how to do things and get along with people, if you're rude to somebody or you use their bathroom without asking or whatever it is, you know, seriously, these things happen.
Yeah.
And so it's foolish to think that it's only your photography that gets you work, number one. Number two, I think you have to understand that not every client wants to look at the same work. And I don't know who you're showing it to, so I can't really answer those things. But
of course,
Vanity Fair does not want to see the same thing that Newsweek wants to see. And Newsweek does not want to see the same exact thing that the Associated Press wants to see. So you have to figure out who you're showing it to. And there may be a few people that fall into that category, but you should customize it to some degree for who your audience is on the other end, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what you're allowed to do on your website. I also think that you are primarily, and this is a cliche, but I think you have to kind of consider the boundaries of it. You're somewhat as good as your weakest link, you know? And if you show me 20 photos, if you show 20 photos and like three of them are like, what the hell is this doing in there? Now I start to question, right? You know, I mean, if you picture it like a date and the date went pretty good and, you know, and she did this or he did that or whatever, and it seemed nice and they were smart and they were funny and they showed up on time and we're getting along. And then out of nowhere, at the end of the night, the valet parking guy comes and he brings you the wrong car and you start cursing at what an idiot is. You're like, hey, what's going on here? First of all, I'm sorry, that's not my car. Oh, that's so funny. Like, there's two different ways to handle things, right? Yes. And you realize, red flag, run away. And that's the same thing with your photo portfolio or your website. If there's like a button, I'm thinking, wait, which person am I getting here? The person that chose these images or the person that thinks this is a good picture? This is not a good picture. And I get that sometimes, you know, your portfolio kind of morphs and stuff. But you want it to be strong. I can't overemphasize, there's no point in a higher number of images if they're not all great in your portfolio. You just want to show this, and nobody thinks this is all you do and you won't make mistakes. They're not stupid, but they only want to see the best stuff. This is what I potentially could do for you. That's what your portfolio is saying to somebody. If you hire me, I could do this kind of work.
And there's no there. Okay, let's take the WWE example because that's what you're in right now. And I think that'll be easiest to probably answer here. Is there any formula that you want as far as the portfolio goes, as far as the images that are captured? Is it like a wide, fans, signage? Like, is it all those things? Or could you potentially receive a portfolio that is just real close-up action and still find a place to use them in your team?
I think that if I receive the second thing that you mentioned, it's one specific type of picture over and over and over, I think what that would do is lead to two questions in my mind, potential and a conversation. Mm-hmm. And I think, oh yeah, I like this stuff. I don't like the fact that they only have one type of photography because that doesn't help me, but I do like what they did show me, so there's potential. That's going to lead to, can we have a conversation about why don't you have any wider stuff? Tell me why none of it exists in your book. Everything, if you think that's the only kind of photo you want to take, fine, but I can't use that. I need somebody to be diverse, to be able to turn around and shoot fans and understand that a wide angle from here showing the whole ring and a guy flying through the air is just as valuable to me as the tight photo of some guy going, or whatever, you know, face they're making in a wrestling move. Right. So I need all of those things. I can't have just one, but I won't discount it if we can have a conversation about it. Beautiful. If I feel that what you did show me is good, it's just not diverse enough, but what I did see is good, then we can have a conversation and there's an option because I see some potential there. So it's possible for sure. I think that it's risky because you're hoping they'll say, hey, can we have a conversation about it? There are people, I'm sure, who will just cut you off and say you only shoot one kind of picture. You know,
and
no photo editor in the world only wants to see one kind of photo because they want options because they work for somebody and the art directors they work for want options, you know? So that kind of is one of those wheels in the hamster cage, you know, that just goes around and around and it doesn't get anywhere. So as long as you're open to having a conversation and maybe go shooting some more and coming back and showing me more stuff, I'm all in. I also want somebody who is enthusiastic about what they're doing, excited, positive about what they're doing. This is me personally, I can tell you. I can't speak for other people, but I want to be around people that are positive about what they're doing. I don't want to hear every complaint that's a possible about what went wrong or what's going to go wrong or what did go wrong. And there isn't a positive thing to be said. I'm like, that's not who I want to hang around with in general, on a weekend at home or at work. That's not who I want to hang around with, you know? So I think being positive and kind of enthusiastic, understanding that it's a team, these are all important things, you know? And again, I stress, photography is not the end all be all. It's part of a puzzle, you know? Even for me, who's not putting it in a magazine, I still have a creative director that has to like the image. Uh-huh. And she has to be able to work with it in order to create key art. And that key art then has to go with different key art for other talent, you know? And in understanding that and realizing that, that's where you realize there's kind of a diverse group of images that you need to find.
Wow. The amount of, I guess, as you just said right there, diversity that you need to be aware of, I suppose, in somebody's portfolio, and recognize it's not just, as you said, about the images, and try to see deeper. That is something that I would imagine is quite a skill that takes a long time to develop. And I appreciate you sharing this knowledge right now. This is wonderful insight. This is something that, you know, haven't really given much thought to. If somebody were to come to you, say that they live in, I don't know, rural Arkansas, right? No major sports teams, no big stadiums or anything, but they're looking to get into, say, sports photography. Could somebody come to you with a portfolio of high school sports, and would that be looked at as legitimate?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And obviously it happens frequently because we all know that we don't all live in the 8 cities that are major cities in the United States. You know, there are people who live other places. And the no pro sports thing is a really, that's an issue sometimes with people that want to break into it. And they don't have like New York, which has like 7, you know, sports teams and within 5 minutes of each other, right? So what I think the suggestion for that is, you use those other things as a catalyst to learn how to shoot sports, and you build your work and your confidence and your understanding of how sports work. What is a great sports image? Because it happens in a high school game and it happens in a pro football game. They're on different levels. I'm not stupid. I realize that. They're also happening more frequently at an NFL game than they do at a high school game, right? But it does happen. So I would suggest that you follow kind of the mantra of Rod Marr, if you know him. He's a Nikon ambassador and he's a team photographer for the Seattle Seahawks. And Rod Marr says, and I'll get the quote wrong to some degree, but basically the essence is be great where you are. So if you're shooting high school sports, then be great at shooting high school sports. And if you're shooting Little League, be great at shooting Little League. Don't always be thinking, oh, if only I was at a Yankees game, I'd have better pictures. Be great where you are, right? And then when you get to those points and you're allowed to go to that Yankees game or a Cubs game or a Dodgers game or whatever, then you're prepared and you're ready, right? So I think that anyone who lives in an Arkansas-type situation, like you said, or many of the other states that fall into that category or areas that fall into that category, is practice what you can do in the locations where you are. And most photo editors, yes, it's kind of, I won't say it means nothing, because it is a shiny little squirrel object when you see a pro football versus the high school game. Sure. It's like, oh, you went to the Colts game. That's, you know, suddenly you think of them a little differently. You don't even know how they got there, but they did. And you kind of do. It's just human nature, right? But the reality is, a great sports photo is a great sports photo. If I saw somebody's work that's shooting Division III football only because that's where they live, and that's their, and they shoot great actions, like, wow, this stuff is great. If you could shoot this, you could shoot Ohio State. If you can shoot Ohio State, then you can shoot the Browns. I mean, it's like it's not a massive leap. It's just a normal step, right? It's no different. It's just an ordinary normal step from progression from one level to another. It's not like you're going to another planet. It's still playing football. So I think that, you know, if you can just factor in, I need to be really good today here and not have my enthusiasm and my effort diminished because it's not at an NFL or NBA level or something. If you can be great there, it'll shine through and eventually you'll get the opportunity. Now, I will tell you that the lower you go, the more opportunity there is, because there's tons of little league games and there's tons of high school games and there's tons of small college games and so forth available to you. You can even talk to the people who work at those places and ask, can I come shoot some photos? And I'll give you pictures in exchange for access or whatever it is you need to kind of do to strengthen yourself, right? And if you have access to a small college, you know, like I said, Division III or something, the lowest level, and say, I'll give you photographs or something, or sell you some photographs or something in exchange for a credential, they're going to say, sure. Nobody's clamoring to go to a Division III football game, right? They're not saying, oh, I'm sorry, we have no credentials left. That's never been said in a Division III football game ever. So, so there is opportunity there. And you just hone your skills. And it's like, you know, it's no different than the athletes. You know what I mean?
Sure.
You're on the same path as the athletes. They didn't start out playing for the Yankees. They played Little League, and then they played high school ball, and then they played for a minor league team. That's all you're doing. It's no different. And I will tell you, my secret is the best sports photographers are just as competitive as the athletes they cover. They don't have to be obnoxious about it, but I guarantee you the best sports shooters, uber competitive, everyone. Yeah. I'm standing next to two guys. I'm going to get the better shot. She's not going to be better than I am today. I'm going to get the better frame of that same exact play with the same lens standing 6 feet from, so-and-so. And I'm going to get the better picture. And the good ones, all are like, whether they're quiet or obnoxious, doesn't matter. They're all like that. I've worked with them too long to not know. Every single one of them is like that.
Yeah.
And the only ones that aren't like that are the ones that drop in from some other subject at a newspaper and they were told to go shoot a football game, but they really normally shoot Broadway or something. And then they just kind of show up and shoot, and that's fine. But the ones who shoot sports, just as competitive.
That's funny. I've chatted with a few sports photographers here on the podcast. One, my favorite being John Suhu, who is the
Dodgers.
Yeah, photographer for the Dodgers.
Known John forever.
Oh my gosh! And that is the exact. That's exactly what I got out of him. That it's not as easy as just taking a picture, and you have to plan these things, and you have to think ahead, and you have to prepare yourself and put yourself in the right spot. And immediately I just was like, I'm not prepared for, something like this. I would much rather just go and enjoy the game.
And John's about as nice guy as there is on the planet, right?
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. He's easygoing. He's nice. He's a lovely man. He's just a good human being, right?
Yeah.
You don't think you're going to, get into some arm wrestling thing and he's going to, do anything to win or something kind of guy. He's just a guy. And he's nice. And he's a wonderful person. And when he's shooting, he knows exactly what's going on. That's the competitive part. It's not just, I'm going to get a better picture. Like I said, I didn't do it justice. It's like what he said. It's being prepared. That's competitive. It's knowing this guy has a bad arm. He's not even playing today. They're using this other guy and he's left-handed. I'm going to be watching for him. And this guy right here has a chance to set a record today. I'm going to be paying attention to that. And that's the competitive part, being prepared. That's part of what competitive is, I mean, I do my job at work knowing full well someday I will not do that job at work, right? Mm-hmm. Someday either I leave or they're going to ask me to leave, because that's how jobs are. All jobs are like that. One of those two things happen for every job you'll ever have in your life. I choose to leave. You ask me to leave. That's it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that happens. And I know that. And so knowing that fuels me to be competitive and think ahead of time and figure out planning ahead and big pictures and what can I do to improve and not keep it the same forever, right? And I want to be prepared and I want to understand how it works, right? And I think that John's the same way. And in John's case, it's hiring other photographers to help him cover the Dodgers in the playoff game, right? He doesn't do it by himself. And that is a level of competitiveness for sure.
Yeah, it was. Again, it became very clear right in that moment. I was like, I'm not cut out for sports. this is not for me. That was great. I know that we are technically we're at the end of our time here, but do you have a brief moment to talk about your work in the White House? I would love to talk about this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was like the, I'll tell you a quick story. I'm sitting on the top of a hotel, rooftop hotel, had a pool in Naples, Italy. And I was there for an economic summit, I think in 1993, maybe 94. The Clinton administration, And I'm like laying by this pool, swimming in the salt water. And this military liaison guy for the White House is sitting next to me. And he looks over and he says, you know, there are worse ways to serve your country. And I said, and I'm like, yeah, that's how I feel about the White House. Like, you know, this is pretty awesome for a few years. Yeah, it's great. So I was working at Sports Illustrated, and we had a newsletter that came out, and they had offered some opportunities to volunteer, which they always do for various things in New York. New York's a big place. There's a lot of things to volunteer for. And this one came up, and they were looking for drivers for the Democratic National Committee, or convention rather. It was sponsored by the Democratic National Committee, Madison Square Garden, 1992. So I said, oh, I know how to drive. I have a license. So I'm not like a lot of New Yorkers. I actually have a license. I could do that. So I volunteered. I got the job. And I was like, okay. And for a couple of times, I like drove people to the convention, and then they called me in and asked me to do like this special drive and everything. And I was all excited. And I picked up Robert Redford. Wow. I'm so excited. I picked up Robert Redford and drove him to his apartment on the Upper East Side or something like that. And he was chatting. He was only chatting about politics. He didn't care that I worked at Sports Illustrated. He just wanted to talk about sport politics for a few minutes. And we started talking, and it kind of occurred to me, like during this driving thing for a couple of days, because the convention lasts, you know, like for a week. And I was like, oh, there's like, you kind of forget until you see it, but it makes sense that, oh, when that administration leaves, the new one comes in. But let's not forget, somebody has to leave. And when they leave, somebody has to fill that job. And then all the math started kind of formulating in my head. And I was like, oh. And then I said, the photo editor, because I found out that you either work for the President of the United States or you work for the White House, the institution itself.
Huh.
They're two different jobs.
Yeah.
And the people that you see on the news, everybody you see ever works for the president. If you work for the White House, then you're administrative or you're a liaison, you know, like the kitchen staff stays, the gardening staff stays, a lot of administrative assistants stay. That just keeps it running so it never stops. But then you bring in your own team and they make a lot of noise, they leave, and then another team comes in, blah, blah, blah. But there's this foundation that stays there forever. And I wasn't sure where photo stood in that. And sure enough, there's like two kind of administrative people that are there forever. But the photo editor leaves when the president leaves. And I was like, oh, this president is probably going to be a new president. It looks like Clinton might win. He's looking pretty good. So I just started making calls and called in every favor I had to see, does anybody know who's going to be running the photo office? Finally figured it out. I called this guy, Bob McNeely, who's the photo director for the White House, or ended up being for Clinton. And I called him every day for 30 straight days. I'm not 30 straight days. I left the same message on some voicemail somewhere for 30 days. Only later did I find out it's like an empty apartment he and his wife own that they rent out. I'm just leaving the same dopey mess. She goes, it's either a great thing this guy's calling you or we should call the police. But anyways, called every day for 30, she tells her husband. And he calls me back and says, yeah, whatever. Cranky old guy calls me back and what do you want? And I told him, and he says, all right, well, come down here to DC and let's talk. And I said, oh, okay. And then that kind of just led to me going down and doing some photo editing for them. I met Tipper Gore, which is a big plus, and worked with her, and I edited some stuff from the campaign and did that, and that worked out well. And then they called me, coincidentally, at a Super Bowl I was at with John Suhu. No, I'm not
making. Wow.
The game was in California, and it's a true story. I can't believe you even mentioned his name. Media day for the Super Bowl that year was at Dodger Stadium. So John was there, and everybody was there, and we're all hanging out. And I get a call from the White House while I'm at Dodger Stadium, and they offered me a job. So it was just crazy coincidence to be the photo editor. And I said, yeah, sure. So then
you say that so nonchalantly, like you didn't call somebody 30 days in a row trying to get this job.
Like you just caught my name. This is after he invited me to D.C. to see if I could actually edit. I had like a test run and stuff. But then they offered me the job. And I said, yeah, that'd be awesome. So I take the job and I quit New York and moved to D.C. Now I kind of oversee the photo department. There's a chief photographer. He's in charge, really. But I oversee the day-to-day, the scheduling, the editing. There's librarians, the whole kind of, you know, the team itself oversaw that. So it was an amazing experience, you know. I mean, I met Mandela, and I meet all these people, and, you know, it's like crazy. You're way in over your head. You know, it's like it was a little insane, because I sometimes think, hey, what's wrong with this picture? How did I get here? You know, because like, 10 years ago, I think I was sleeping in my car. Now I'm like working for the president, you know? So it's,
that's amazing. So yeah, I have two side questions on that. One, was it anything like working or like the show The West Wing, where like it's just busy all the time and you're just always overwhelmed and there's so much to do? Anything like that?
So there's two things to that. There's a 1 and a 1A. One, if the president's at the actual Oval Office, mm-hmm. versus he's on a trip somewhere or he's over in the residence or whatever. If he's in the Oval Office, yes, it's buzzing and humming like a beehive. And then 1A is, it probably also depends on who the president is, you know, it's like the, mm-hmm. how many, that kind of, I'm sure it changes from administration to administration. I only know the Clinton one. And yeah, it was definitely buzzing. People are moving. And a lot of it had to do with like, he's a new president. He's youngish for a president actually at the time. There was a lot of hope involved in it. Like, you know, there is when certain presidents kind of, I'm sure it's that way when Obama took over, but a lot of energy in the beginning of it. And I was in the beginning, but totally a lot of people running around trying to figure out what to do. A lot of energy, a lot of 48 things going on at once. They're all trying to figure out local and domestic and national and global and stuff. And yeah, it's pretty crazy. And you realize there's a lot of stuff that affects a lot of people going on in this building right now, you know? And our job was to take the 4 photographers we had and document everything that president does in his workday. And by association, his spouse, in this case, the first lady, and if he wants to, any family members. Chelsea was off limits, so we didn't really shoot her because she was like a teenager then, like 11, 12, 13, 14 years old. So we didn't really photograph her, but between the first lady and the president, we documented everything. And in doing so, it's a lot of work. And it's a lot of heavy responsibility, because it's really, you're shooting us for the country. I mean, you think you're shooting for the president and so forth, but in reality, you're shooting it for the National Archives to oversee this documentation of this presidency, which will just be fulfilled later by another president and then later another president. You know, it kind of never ends. So it's a lot of responsibility to make sure that you are doing that job justice, because it's really, it's a point in history that you are taking images of to document that point in history for other generations to look at, you know?
So. Wow. So when you work at a magazine, there's like an end date, right? Like that magazine's got to come out.
Yeah.
When working in the White House, did it feel anything like that, or was it similar at all?
The only time it felt like that, I mean, magazines, clearly newspapers, they have deadlines. And whether it's Thursday or whether it's 2 o'clock or whatever, they all have some deadline for sure. The time that comes through, the White House basically takes what we call photo ops, you know, the president doing something, into 2 categories. One where they allow the press to cover it. And there's somebody there from the Times and there's somebody there from Getty, et cetera, along with the White House. And the other one is they close it off to the press and they deliver the photo to the press because they want to either control it or it's sensitive or they just don't, for whatever reason, they don't want anybody else there. And that happens on occasion. So then that's the time when like, wow, there's this deadline. We just took a photo of the president with this world leader. They talked about something really sensitive. We took a couple of photos. We got out of the room. They finished their conversation. We're now essentially the pool photographer, which is the distributor in general for everybody. We pick an image, we put it across the wire and make it available to everybody. That's when that deadline kind of kicks in, that newspaper magazine mentality. That's when that happens. So that's not even every day. Other than that, it's just normal kind of, we're busy and you can't get behind kind of day. You ever worked in a restaurant?
I have, yes.
You ever worked in the kitchen and the dishes area by any chance?
No, okay. I did not.
So I will tell you, I did for a Chinese restaurant. And one thing I learned was you never want to get behind. Because once you're behind washing dishes at a restaurant, you are screwed because you'll never get caught up. Sinks piling up. The machine only goes so fast. You know what I mean? And the photos are like that at the somewhere like the White House. You can't get behind. You have to constantly stay up on the edits and archiving them and moving them on because there's a new one and it never stops. And if it starts backing up, suddenly you go from like 2 days behind to a week to month and whatever, and then you're out of a job. You know, I mean, you got to keep up. So it's like that. And really, all presidents, it never ends. So even when President Trump goes to his home in Florida and he's hanging out doing nothing officially for a week, there's still somebody photographing it, him saying hi to people, him golfing, whatever it is. There's still pictures coming in. They have to be edited. So there's never a time off. There's no off season, you know? So that part is, it's pressure, but that's more a sustained everyday kind of thing. But yeah, it's definitely the headiest job you would ever have, because you have access to the President of the United States. I mean, you know, I'll tell you a quick story. My brother, much older than me, my brother's like 10 years older than I am, when he's deceased now, but when he was alive, and I took the job at the White House, he couldn't understand in a million years, why would you leave Sports Illustrated to go work at the White House? You know, like, I don't understand. Why would you leave a perfectly great job to take less money to go work at the White House? And he asked me, he says, but when you leave the White House, what are you going to do? And I looked at him and I said, anything I want, yeah. You know? And that's how I felt, because like, I just worked at the White House. I can do anything I want, like, you know? And I think that's one of the appeals to it, is like, this is really awesome. I could just, and not that you have to turn it into some, you know, industry that you make a ton of money. It's just, this is the top of the game. You're documenting the president, you know? It's pretty cool, I have to say. Yeah.
Well, it's like you were saying earlier. It's like if you see somebody just shooting like high school sports, and then they go photograph like a Colts game, they're on a different level. And it's just it's just a human thing. If you are working at the White House, that's something to be said. Like there's a bit of prestige. There's a lot of prestige.
It's kind of downhill after that, to be honest. I mean, unless the Pope gave me a call, I don't know who the world leader is that is. I don't speak Latin, so it probably wouldn't work anyway. But It was great. I was lucky, very fortunate to be asked to go back to Sports Illustrated in a different capacity when I left the White House. So I was able to kind of, you know, move it into a different category, which elevated me a little as a photo editor and started me towards working as more of a director of photography thing. So that it worked. The experience worked out well for me, but it was truly an interesting time. And you see everything inside, you know, you see them as human beings, not just the press conferences where they talk perfect and answer this and answer that. They're just people, you know. I have a picture somewhere. I actually just showed it to that class earlier today me talking to the president, and the back, he's like holding the Diet Coke in his hand. It's like they're just people, you know. I mean, they just happen to have a different job than you and I do. But
yeah, like you could Photoshop up the background, make it a pool party, and 100%. You know, change it to a beer, and it's still the same photo.
Yeah, we just look dumb. In a tie, but other than that, the pool party might work. Yeah.
That's too funny.
The guy with a can in his hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brad, I have to say, man, this has been so extremely enjoyable of a conversation for me. I really appreciate you sharing just a small portion of all of your knowledge in this amazing photo industry here. Before I let you go, why don't you let listeners know where they can find you online and learn more about you?
Yeah, well, I do have along with the WWE, I have a consulting business where I work with photographers. I just finished working with one from Getty recently, and a couple others, you know, that are freelance, and they basically want to kind of reboot or recharge. And I do a lot of consulting. It's bradsmithcreative.com. So I work with a lot of people from that. And all the things that I do is listed on there. I also teach a photo editing workshop out of Summit Photography Workshops out of Colorado. Summit. And I work with them. We've done like 4 workshops so far on photo editing, which has been really great, because I think I thought when we started the workshop, it would be like a bunch of 25-year-olds that want to be eager to be photo editors, because that's in my head. Sure, that's what they want to do with their time.
Well, that was you.
Because that was me, right? But in fact, it's a little of that. It's also some photographers who are like, I just want to hear what photo editors even do, so I can maybe change my photography a bit and like work with them a little cleaner. And that made perfect sense, mixed in with some people that just were curious or whatever. But the way I kind of looked at all those things, like photo editing and stuff, was like, there are far more people that work for the Yankees than play for the Yankees. You know what I mean? So that's how I've always looked at my thing. I wasn't going to play for the Yankees, but I wanted to work for the Yankees. And that's how photography is to me. I don't want to be a shooter, but there's all these great ways to make a living in photography without actually picking up the camera. And if you like the visual and you like the collaborative and you like to be creative, there's a lot of chances, and photo editing's one of those things. So I think anybody that wants to get into it, there's a lot of great opportunities, and you'll be very happy. I've been rewarded beyond anybody's imagination how good it's been. I've traveled around the world, you know, 9 Olympics and 19 Super Bowls, a peace treaty signing, couple of WrestleManias, you know, all the big things that we do in life, the important stuff. It's been great. I have no complaints whatsoever. It's nobody's luckier than I am. I truly believe that, you know.
That is such a great sentiment. I really don't know how to end it any better than that right there. Brad, again, thank you so much for coming on and sharing everything that you did. And I look forward to keeping up with you in the future.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. It was such a nice thing to get your invite. And I'm happy to be here and honored that you would ask me. Thank you very much.
My biggest takeaway from this interview with Brad, hands down, is we as photographers really do associate ourselves with our work. So when we get critique on our photos, we take that as a critique on ourselves. And that can be tough. And that can mean that we don't want to show our work to others. And we're kind of trapped in this place of, we create work and we want to get better, but we also don't want to show our photos to anybody else, which will actually help us to get better. So, obviously, trying not to take any critiques for your photography very personal, but also, and more importantly, the importance of getting your photo seen by as many people as possible, because that's the only way that you are going to get feedback on your work. You know, you can look at it and you can love it, but I don't think that art survives in a vacuum. Maybe it does. I don't know. No, everything can be considered art. Every single thing. So if you are not creating art that resonates with others, but only yourself, you know, I mean, maybe, you know, like, what are you doing it for? You know, if you want to make a name for yourself, if you want to work in the industry, there has to be some give and take. You have to be able to create something that somebody who's willing to pay you actually wants. And to do that, you need to be able to take feedback and criticism. And that's one thing that I try to promote within the Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook community, is that, like, I want you to come in and ask for a criticism on your photos and know that, you know, maybe your photos aren't the best, but there will be something in every photo that, you know, you can take the good away from it and create better photos for next time. So I would love to hear your biggest takeaway from this interview with Brad, and just let him know, hey, thank you for coming on and doing this episode. You can do so by heading over to the Beginner Photography Podcast community on Facebook by just searching Facebook for Beginner Photography Podcast, and you'll find it there. So that is it for this week. Again, I look forward to hearing your biggest takeaway. That's going to be a good one. So that's it for this week. Until next week, I want you to get out. I want you to shoot. I want you to make do. You haven't heard me say that one in a while. I want you to make more. I want you to do more. I want you to make do with what you got. And I want you to stay safe. All right. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Beginner Photography Podcast. If you enjoy the show, consider leaving a review in iTunes. Keep shooting, and we'll see you next week.
And I think that, you know, the one thing, I probably didn't say this really enough, but I mean, and not necessary to go back and add it, but I think that you can get so much out of being a part of, if you're sincere and people realize you're sincere, of the photo community, you know, really good about helping each other and finding opportunities and working together. And if you just use it for your own self gain, you'll get exactly what you deserve out of that. You know what I mean? But
of course,
if you really sincerely want to be part of the community, it's a great community to be a part of. And I love it. And I've been positive about it from the beginning. I'm definitely not a look back guy. Oh, back in the day, blah, blah, blah. And like, and that's just not me in general. So, but you know, I think there's so much to be offered in the community, because here I am, like, I'm on a podcast with somebody who primarily shoots wedding photography. I mean, why would we, and I do pro wrestling. Tell me on this planet where we should be talking to each other at all. There's no reason for it. Really serious. You put it down on paper. Nope, not a match, you know, but here we are having a good conversation. I mean, that's kind of, to me, the fact that we're even doing this right now is kind of indicative of what the whole community is. You know, that's the cool part.
Yeah. Always tried to take the approach of like, everybody knows something that I don't. And if I can learn that from them, then I think the whole world can only get better if we record those conversations and share it with everybody else, you know?
I agree. I years ago, I went to visit one of my photographers, sports guys, true nothing but sports guy out in LA. And he had on his coffee table at his house a David LaChapelle photo book. Mm-hmm. You know David LaChapelle?
I don't. I'm not familiar.
Like really kind of conceptual art, crazy ass, like photography, you know, with little people and makeup and rainbows and like just crazy stuff. And amazing, like a genius, crazy genius puts it all together. And I said, DJ, why are you looking at this stuff? I said, hey, how do you know David? He goes, oh man, this book is awesome. It's like, look at this stuff. He's so creative. Look how fun he is. Like, he's never going to do that. He's never going to own a print or put it in his house. But yet he's reading the book because it just like, it was interesting and he's learning something. It doesn't matter whether he does it for a living. You know what I mean? He's just learning in general, like you just said. And it's like, yeah, open yourself up to those things. And then you have, if you open yourself up, you have opportunity. And if you're prepared and you have a strategy, then you got, you know, then you have a real winning hand, you know? I mean, and that's kind of how it is. So I agree with you. You can't learn enough stuff. And why not? I mean, that's what you're here for, right?